Welcome to episode 5 of the Three's Company Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rowe, superintendent at Henning Public School. I first off would like to thank all of our listeners who have been checking out each episode as they've been released. It has been very humbling to see how many people have been listening each time we release a new episode and our fan base continue to grow. The first 4 episodes, we've had great guests. Episode 5 does not disappoint. We've got Danny Steele, Chris Fisher, and Martha Rush. All of them have great answers. You need to especially listen to their last question about resolving conflict. All of them have great responses to that. Well, let's get started. Welcome to the Three's Company Leadership Podcast. Our guest here is Danny Steele, who has spent 26 years in education, 8 years as a principal of school. Now he's moving on to the next stage of his life. He's going to be an assistant professor helping guide the future administrators the way that he sees it. Also an author and a speaker. So he is a busy, busy man and in the great state of Alabama. So we're lucky to have Danny Steele here with us today. So Danny, why don't we get started and you kind of give us a little rundown about yourself and how you got in education.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you having me. It's an honor to be with you today. I started off in college. My major was sociology. I thought I was going to be a probation officer. And my sophomore year of college in 1989, I listened to a tape of it was a radio broadcast of the National Teacher of the Year, a fellow named Guy Dowd. He was the Teacher of the Year, National Teacher of the Year in 1986. And so I listened to him talk about the impact that teachers had on him as a student and the relationships that he's been able to build with students as a teacher. And it was so inspirational to me. It inspired me to change my major to teaching. And so that semester I changed my major and I taught history and coached for 8 years, all in the Birmingham area. And I was an assistant principal for 10 years in 4 different high schools, and then a principal for the last 8, 3 at a high school and the last 5 at a 6th grade center where I had about 500 6th graders. And, you know, I've had the great privilege of being around kids, a lot of really neat kids for the last 26 years, and been fortunate to work with some really passionate and dedicated teachers and administrators and support staff. So it's been a great 26 years so far, but I'm looking forward to the next step and trying to impact the next generation of school leaders. So I'm excited about what the future holds.
Yeah, I think you'll have a lot to offer, and you bring a lot of experience. And especially, you know, I think, you know, one of the reasons I wanted you on here today is your passion for, you know, how you want to develop relationships with kids and drive your teachers to do that too. So, you know, I think you'll be missed in that setting, but I think you'll make a great impact helping guide those future administrators moving forward here. As we get into this here, is there a person or maybe a few people that have impacted you and helped you become the leader that you are today?
Well, I'll mention 2 people. There was a guy named Cass McWaters, who was a longtime educator here, still is an educator, but I was his assistant principal for 6 years at 2 different schools. And I'm always grateful for the confidence he had in me. But he was a great example of someone who never lost his passion for connecting with kids. He was relentless about supporting his teachers, and was a great problem solver and was a great example of someone who could think outside the box, was always trying to move the needle in terms of pushing the envelope for what's best for kids. So he was a great mentor for me. And then there's a guy named Todd Whitaker who wrote a book. Well, he's written a bunch of books, actually, but 2 books that had an influence on me early on. What great teachers do differently and what great principals do differently. And one thing that always stood out to me in the great, what great principals do differently is, his point about doing things that matter, doing things that add the most value to your organization. And so that has always been a reminder to me to be clear on what my priorities are and to be clear on what's the best use of my time as I move through the day. And so it's because he was always a role model for me. I looked up to him. It was a very cool opportunity to have the chance to write a couple books with him that came out this past spring. So that's been a great thing. And I've always admired him and the values that he represents for educators.
Yeah, shameless plug, right? Essential Truths for the Teachers and Essential Truths for the Principals, two great books that people can go and grab. And Todd and you both worked on those together. So that's awesome. And then obviously when it's somebody who's kind of been a mentor to you, that's even a great honor to work on a project like that. You've been in the game, you've been an administrator for a long time in education. How do you embrace risk-taking as a leader?
Well, you know, you're never going to be awesome if you're trying to stay safe all the time. And so you have to be comfortable in your own skin. You have to be secure in what you're doing. You know, those have to be foundational before you're going to step out on a limb and step out of your comfort zone. But I think, you know, what needs to motivate us is that the kids can't really afford for us to be average. And I don't want to just be a mediocre administrator. And so if you want to excel, if you want to be awesome, you just have to, you have to try some things. And, you know, there've been different opportunities or ideas that come my way and they don't always seem practical or they might not seem feasible or they might not work. But over the last few years, sort of the kind of the criteria that I was using in my own head is, does this idea, if we can pull it off, does this have the potential to be ridiculously awesome? Could it be a game changer? And if I feel like it could be really a game changer, then we're going to try it. And sometimes, you know, you'll try new things and they'll blow up in your face, but you have to be willing to try. You have to be willing to try.
Yeah, I like that. I like it's in that role, anyone that's in that leadership role, they have to be, if you're comfortable, you're probably not doing it right. You know what I mean? It's not the gig, but you got to be able to do that. So I like how you're saying you want to find things that are game changers and step out there and do it. And that's a great way to look at it. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's also important as a leader to be a role model for your instructional staff. I mean, there's a lot written and spoken about the importance of innovation in education, and we want teachers to be innovators. Well, that involves a lot of risk taking. And as the leader, it's important that you sort of lead the way and are an example of someone who's willing to be a little bit vulnerable yourself. And sometimes when you fail, you need to fail publicly and be transparent about it. But that, I think, sets a great example for the teachers to follow.
Yeah, I love that vulnerability. It seems to be with a lot of the conversations I've had, a lot of people talk about that now and being able to, you know, if you're wrong, hey, you accept it. But you broadcast it, you let them know. But when you're right too, you know, you're leading the way and you're driving those instructional teachers in that way that you want them to go. So yeah, I like that. What are some of the most important values that you demonstrate as a leader?
Well, you don't have anything really if you don't have your integrity. So having credibility, having integrity, that's got to be foundational. But then after that, it's about relationships. We get into the business for kids, and it is absolutely imperative that you love kids. As an administrator, it's also important that you love teachers and the adults in the building. And so your commitment to building relationships with those folks, connecting with them, supporting them, empowering them, that is a value that I think is just I can't think of anything that really trumps that. Two other values that are very important to me when leading a school. One would be developing a culture of collaboration, where you're fostering an environment where the adults are working together for the benefit of the kids. And then finally, a commitment to bringing positive energy to work. You know, there's a lot in our work that we can't control. We can't control the mandates. We can't control the funding. We can't control the kids that are in our building. We certainly can't control their parents. But we sure can control the level of energy and enthusiasm and passion that we bring to work each day. Passion for connecting with kids, passion for supporting our staff, and a passion for making a difference with all those with whom we interact. So those are some values that I try to allow to drive my work every day.
Oh, that speaks to me a lot. I like that, how you ended that there. So that's super strong. You know, that is the one thing we can't control, a lot of things in education, but the one thing you can control is your passion. So I love that as a great takeaway with that one. What leadership skills, or one in particular, maybe that was maybe difficult for you to develop as you were moving through the administration ranks?
This is sort of an easy one for me. And I've talked about it extensively in other settings. And that is, as I mentioned, teachers get into education for kids. And so building relationships with kids and supporting kids, like, that's what drives us. Well, when you become an administrator, and for me, when I became an assistant principal, you know, we're still in it for the kids, but the focus has to shift a little bit to now we're not winning over kids, but we're winning over teachers. And so the focus is building relationships with teachers, winning them over and supporting them. And that did not come naturally for me. I don't think it comes naturally for most educators, because most educators are in it for the kids. Yep. I learned that administrators will be defined by their ability to support teachers. And so I learned that lesson the hard way. Not that I was ever unkind to teachers, or I was never trying to be unsupportive, but my focus was basically exclusively on the kids. And so I made a concerted effort several years into being an AP. I realized I needed a paradigm shift in my approach to administration. I needed to really focus on winning over the teachers and the other adults working in the building. And that focus has really served me well over the last 15 or 16 years. And it actually allows you to, you know, those teachers that you're supporting, they have a heart for kids. They're going to be supporting kids. They're going to be doing what's right for kids. So it's not like you're ever sort of taking kids out of the loop. You know, I still love students, and I'm still connecting with kids every day that I'm in the school building. But the focus for administrators really has to shift to kind of winning over the adults. And that was a skill set. That was a learning curve for me. That was a big one.
Was there a particular like resource that helped you get in that shift? Was there something that you read, or was there like somebody that you talked to that maybe helped you refocus that
well,
piece?
Well, it's kind of a painful memory, actually. I'd been an assistant principal at this school for 2 years, and the principal retired, and I felt like that I had this great shot, you know, as to step into the position. And the principal told me, I remember riding in the car with him back from a meeting, and I remember him saying, "Danny, I think some of the teachers see you more as an advocate for kids than as an advocate for the teachers." And I remember thinking, well, yeah, I'm guilty. I'm here for the kids. Well, I ended up not getting that job. And I realized that, you know, no faculty is going to want a leader who they do not feel like is in their corner, who's going to go to bat for them, who's going to have their back. So I resolved at that point, you know, I kind of learned that hard lesson. I didn't get the job. But I really made a concerted effort after that to to do everything I could to demonstrate support to the staff in the building.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's, I think we've all kind of had that, especially with the sign of social media and all the different, you know, Facebook, Twitter, like people talk about, well, how do you get an admin job? And then, you know, you interview and you don't get them. And, you know, there are pieces that for sure you have to have. And I think that is one, being able to lead the teachers, but get your energy in there. So, yeah, I think that's really good. You kind of touched on this a little bit, but getting the stakeholders. So maybe talking about parents, students, teacher buy-in to your new ideas or changes that you want to make.
Well, I guess one of the values I could have talked about that I didn't, I sort of take it for granted, but it's this whole notion of authenticity and being genuine. And I am transparent with my passion. I'm transparent with my values. And it's my goal that everybody who ever works with me knows that I'm about the kids and I'm about what's best for the kids, and the teachers as well, for sure. But so when you're meeting with people and they understand where your heart is, they know that your passion lies with their sons and daughters and doing what's best for them, and doing everything you can to improve their education, they will give you the benefit of the doubt. They'll run with you. They'll jump on board. In terms of teachers, the same is true. You know, in terms of being transparent with your values and being genuine in everything you're saying and doing. But then it's just that building the relationships, and that takes time. But I've said many times that before teachers will buy into your vision, they have to first buy into you. So sometimes administrators can make a mistake of shortchanging the process of building credibility and establishing rapport with their faculty. But that process of building rapport and developing some shared values, building those relationships, that goes a long, long way to making sure everyone's pulling the wagon in the same direction.
Yeah, for sure doing that. Yeah, I think that's the main cog in that whole thing to getting the buy-in right there. You know, when you have staff that maybe might be conflicting with one another, how do you resolve some of those internal conflicts in the building? How do you correct some of those?
Well, I think it's important to be candid, and you know, I'm sort of wired for transparency, and so getting adults in the same room to talk to one another, appealing to common values in terms of doing what's best for kids. And sometimes it's just a matter of trying to get some clear communication to resolve misunderstandings. But it's always best to do everything you can to foster clear, open, and honest communication, and to keep the focus on, you know, the mission of the school. And that's doing what's best for students.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the big one there, with especially with the, if you see it too, I've seen some leaders that ignore these issues happening, and they're small and they could be corrected right away by just having a transparent conversation. But as you, some ignore it, and then all of a sudden it becomes a bigger issue, and then it's a lot harder to correct or help solve. So those things are always difficult that way. But I like how you're saying about being transparent with everybody and putting it all out there. So that's a good thing. Well, Danny, you survived my six questions for you. Is there anything that you want to share with anybody out there before I let you go today?
I do appreciate you giving me this opportunity. I appreciate the platform that you provide to kind of elevate the voice of educators. And, you know, I'm not sure when this podcast will air, but it's currently the summer right now, middle of June or so. And it's such an important time for educators to relax and get rejuvenated spend time with friends and family. Education is such a hard job, and you know, educators take on such an emotional load with the things that their kids are dealing with, and the pressures they have with testing. And so I hope that all the educators out there who hear this are able to rest and relax, and maybe do a little bit of professional learning, but mostly get rejuvenated so they're ready to go for the next school year, because what they do is so, so important, making a difference for kids every day.
Yeah, it comes back to what you said earlier about, hey, you can control your energy, right? Get rejuvenated so you can get that energy up to finish that, you know, that 9-month school year there. Again, if you want to follow Danny Steele on Twitter, at Steele Thoughts, or you can type in Danny Steele and find him there. He also has two books out, The Essential Truths for Teachers and Essential Truths for Principals. You know, I wish you the best of luck too on your new adventure. I know it'll be maybe a little challenging. You won't necessarily have those school age kids, but you'll be making an impact on those college age kids. So I just want to thank you for taking the time and being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me. I hope you have a great summer.
Hey there, Threes Company podcast listeners. Have you checked out CoachTube.com? CoachTube is the place to go to master your sport. There is a place where you can download any on-demand clinic or playbook that you can imagine. Also, if you are into it, you can even be your own entrepreneur. You can put up your own material on there and sell it all around the world. I've used it. It's a great asset to coaches everywhere. Check it out.
Welcome to the Threes Company Leadership Podcast. We're joined with my next guest, Chris Fisher, joining us from Texas today. And I've known Chris through social media, through Twitter, never met face-to-face, but obviously he's one of the pioneers with professional development and doing the Texas football chat weekly. I even had my little hand in it with our Minnesota one for a little while, but you know, he's thriving strong and is one of the originators of this, and it's just been a great piece for coaches to go and constantly get educated and not have to leave their house, and they can spend time with family. So it's just a great resource, and he's just a genuine person who cares about kids and coaches and teaches and does a lot of great things. So we're really glad to have Chris here today. So how are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good today, Mike. Thanks for having me on this. I'm really honored that you invited me.
Yeah, well, we're glad you could be here. You know, you do a lot of great things, and it's fun to be able to share some of your story. Why don't you tell everyone that might not know you a little bit about your path through education and how you became a teacher and a coach?
Okay. I just finished my 18th year of coaching and teaching. You know, going through high school and college, I was, you know, greatly impacted by my high school and coaches and teachers. And it's just something that, you know, I always kind of felt that I knew I wanted to do. I wanted to work with kids. And so when I went into school and, you know, decided to pursue education, and that became my sole focus. So, you know, I've been teaching and coaching since 2001. I've taught middle school and, now, for the most part, I've been teaching and coaching high school, and I just finished 8 years at the same school at my Ridge Point High School in Texas, where I coach the offensive line for our varsity football team. I'm also a girls assistant track coach, and then I also teach aquatic science, which is, you know, I've taught aquatic science for, I guess, about 12 or 13 years that I've been teaching. So it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed working with the kids every day. And I enjoy the different kids in the class, in my class and on football, and then also in girls track. It's really fun.
Yeah. I always like it when it's Shark Week, 'cause I know that's when you're going to be pumping out a lot of good stuff too. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're on my Twitter account and if you don't like sharks or the ocean, then I don't know why you're on my Twitter account.
I'm there just to show my son. My 3-year-old son is just crazy about ocean animals right now. So Anytime you post anything that deals with that, I'm showing him, and he just loves that stuff. So I appreciate you sharing those things. So,
oh yeah, it's awesome. It's really fun, amazing stuff.
Good. Is there a person, or maybe there's a couple people that have had an impact on you, that mentored you to help you become the leader that you are today?
I've been fortunate, you know, like I mentioned just now, that I've had a few teachers and coaches throughout my life. You know, I think back to my high school coaches, Coach Scott Phillips and Coach Thomas Brooks, were primary examples, in playing days. And then also, you know, during my profession, or in the early part of my profession, I'd go to them for guidance. And, you know, just as a player, they're very inspiring, you know, and guys that when you're in your formative years, you know, guys that you want to be like. And then getting to know them, you know, as I entered the coaching profession and listening to their wisdom and how to kind of, you know, handle things, you know, was really helpful. And then, you know, also I was fortunate to work with a couple guys who just were great leaders and, you know, really cared about the kids that they worked with. As Coach Tony Frankie, and then my first high school head coach, Coach Jeff Hume. And they just filled with positive integrity and also, you know, also really good at showing how to balance your work and your home and all your priorities. So just, you know, those are the guys that I look to and enjoy thinking about when I reflect on where I've been.
Oh, those are good role models, good people to look up to. You know, as a teacher, as a coach, you know, you got to take some risks sometimes to get some benefits. So how do you embrace risk-taking as a leader?
Really, for me, I've never thought of myself as a big risk taker, but then when I think about what I do, and whenever you give kids and you rely on kids to do what you want them to do, I think that's risk-taking. Just because, I mean, kids are so unpredictable, but yet they're also, you know, really just fun and amazing people to work with, because you're so worried about what they're going to do and how they're going to perform. And then they go out there and they do exactly what you want them to do. And it's just awesome to watch. And you know, when it comes to like me embracing risks, like I said, I don't feel like I'm much of a risk taker, but I do, you know, the chances I take, I make sure that I know what's going on. You know, I'm an evaluator. I'm a researcher, you know, when it comes to those things. I like to look at every single option. You know, very rarely do I just, you know, kind of flip a coin and go, okay, let's do that. Yeah. That's how I'd handle it. So.
A calculated risk taker is still a risk taker with all that. And obviously with, you know, the Texas football chat, that was a risk that you took. And now, you know, you look at that, and as a teacher and a coach, you're doing stuff. I'm sure you're bringing new lessons in, new drills in, and, you know, there's not work the way you want them to the first time. So, you know, I think everybody takes those risks. It's just, you know, like you said, if it's calculated and you kind of evaluate it, you know, it doesn't feel like you're taking such a big leap when you've kind of done all the legwork leading up to it. What is the most important value that you demonstrate as a leader?
For me, I think the most important thing I do is I understand, you know, the kids, or I try to understand the kids. And, you know, with that comes, you know, some flexibility and patience. Because if you're not patient, you know, to me, then you're just going to fly off the handle real quick and not give someone the chance to really show, you know, what's going on with them, you know, because I mean, with people's backgrounds, they have to be able to, you know, they come from so many different backgrounds, especially in the area that I coach and teach, that, you know, you don't know what these kids have been coming through. You don't know what their morning was like. And if you're not patient, if you're not flexible and understanding with them, then, you know, that's a missed opportunity to me. And that's not being the leader that you're supposed to be when it comes to kids.
Yeah, I think patience for sure is an underrated trait. You know, people want results right away because that's kind of how our world is turning. But yeah, I think that's very, very important skill to have there. Was there a particular leadership skill that was maybe difficult for you to develop?
I think probably for me, it's probably communication, just because I'm not like the most, especially in person, I'm not like a real outgoing type of guy. Yeah, once I get to know people and feel very comfortable talking with them, I'm really good behind a keyboard. But you know, as far as like just communicating and knowing how to say it, when to say it, you know, and approaching or even broaching a subject, you know, that's the biggest thing that I've had to work on throughout my career and develop. And now I feel pretty comfortable. You know, I don't have a problem with it. In fact, I've been fortunate to take on our leadership council responsibilities. So where I work with our kids who are our elected leaders for the football team. And that's been fun and also very, very developing for me as well, because it's helped me look at different skills and also, you know, talk and communicate with these kids, because the kids, even today, they don't communicate the same way in 2019 that they did when I started, you know, coaching in 2001 or when I went to high school in 2004. And, you know, it's been very interesting as they develop. You there?
Yeah. You got me. So when we look at stakeholders and getting buy-in, how do you get people to buy into your new ideas or changes and things like that?
I think, to me, like I mentioned, being flexible, I think to get buy-in with new ideas, you have to show your flexibility too. I mean, you have to show that you believe in it and that that you're willing to pursue it, but you know, you have to be flexible and understand that it may not always work out exactly the way you think it is. And so, you know, with that flexibility comes, you know, being willing to listen and to accept other people's thoughts and ideas on maybe how to do it better, how to tweak it or how to make it really work for them. So, you know, anytime you present something new, you know, there's no guarantee it's going to work. So be flexible and be open to, you know, the mistakes that come along the way and to other people's input.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. And listen to it and make those changes. Yeah. That's, I always feel that we don't always listen to what, you know, we're listening to respond all the time instead of listening to, you know, take in and accept. That's a great thing. And that's why I do like the Twitter stuff, because mm-hmm. for instance, you don't have to respond. You can just read it and you can go through and take those ideas and go, hey, that's really good. I like that, you know? So I like that. Okay. This is always the hard one. Or go ahead.
I was like, oh, definitely. Cause I mean, I would just look, when I look at my Twitter stats and stuff from the chat, you know, just looking at the number of people who participate in it and the number of people who view it. I mean, there is a huge difference, you know, and I think one of the things that Twitter has helped me realize too, not that I considered myself before, but you know, I'm not an expert and I don't know that many people who, I mean, I don't know that many people who really consider themselves an expert. And then the more I read, the more I know that, you know, there's more I need to learn. So, I mean, that's the funnest part for me, is going back through the chat and learning from these guys who have other ways of doing things or a tweak of a way that we do something similar. So that, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, no doubt there. Now, this is always the hard one, but it's always interesting to hear, you know, when you're coaching, when you're teaching, when you're doing things, sometimes conflict comes up. How do you help resolve conflict so that it doesn't escalate and things like that?
Right. That is a tough one, because, I mean, especially it depends on what know, at where you see that conflict. Because, you know, if you're able to catch it early, it's easy to talk it out, you know, and kind of like, hey, let's figure this out, what's going on, and let's stop this now. But sometimes you see conflict, you know, when it's, you know, when it goes too far and it starts to cross that line and things, you know, in some cases that conflict gets heated. And so, you know, then what do you do? And my first thought, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I'm patient, I'm flexible, I'm a listener. So I like to listen and hear what, you know, what they're doing, what led to this. And, you know, and I'm going to listen to both sides, you know, and I want to know, you know, what this side is thinking and what the other side is thinking before I, you know, kind of put my two cents in. And I think when you do that, that is how you build the relationships, and that's how you establish trust that whatever happens to resolve this conflict, they know that you are doing the best for those kids or for your program, or, you know, sometimes even with coaches, you know, because coaches can have conflict too with each other. You know, what do they, you know, you have to establish that trust by showing that you listen and are willing to listen, and that you care about, you know, what they're going through and what led to, you know, that conflict.
Yeah, no, and like right away, I think you nailed it. Like right, like your first part of your answer to saying, you know, if you handle it early enough, it's going to get resolved. It's like too many people sometimes just ignore that and they let it get to where now it becomes like a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's a crazy thing. Do you have anything that you've used to develop to get your team to buy into the things that that you do, like your offensive linemen or maybe your coaching staff or your leadership council? Are there some things that you do?
Honestly, I think the best thing to develop buy-in is, you know, for them to buy into me, I think the best thing I do is just be genuine. You know, I don't build myself up to be something I'm not. I let them see, you know, who I am, what I stand for. I also think just time together and, you know, isolated time together, you know, in casual moments is important to do. So, you know, I remember, you know, there was an offensive line group that I had every year is different. Every group is different. I had one group that, you know, they were real good, and we'd go eat together every now and then. And that was good for them. You know, another group I'd have come over to the house and play video games, bring pizza, and, you know, and that's what they needed, you know, and other groups, you know, not so much, you know. So, I mean, it just kind of depends. And I think the same thing goes with coaches too. You know, we need, you know, as a coaching staff, you have to have time together. You have to trust those guys. And it can't just be built there in the office on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, you kind of do have to spend time away, you know, and get to know each other and see who they are and what they stand for, because that's how we show the kids, like, hey, we're working together. We're in this together. You are part of this too.
No, that's awesome. That's how you get it. I like that. Really good job getting buy-in with those. Chris, thanks for being on the podcast. If they want to follow you on your personal Twitter, we'll do that one first. What's that one?
My personal Twitter is @CoachFisher_RP. And Fisher is FISHER. So @CoachFisher_RP. And there you'll get all sorts of, you know, you'll get football, you'll get, you know, teaching. You'll also get, like mentioned before, lots of sharks and occasional Oreo mention.
There you go. Oreo shout outs are the best. And then you also have your other one, your professional development chat with the Texas High School Football Chat. And that Twitter handle is?
Yes, it's @TXHSFBChat. And with that, we have the hashtag, which is #TXHSFBChat. And that's every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Central. And we have different topics every week, explore, you know, X's and O's, leadership, program development, organization, all sorts of topics. It's a lot of fun. And this week's topic, we are talking motions and shifts. So
there you go. Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff. Even if you're not participating, you can go there and read through all that good stuff. Chris, yeah, thanks for being on here. I really appreciate it. You know, you're a genuine person, and it's just good to have you and get some of your perspectives on some of these leadership questions. So I appreciate you taking the time today to be interviewed.
Well, you're welcome. And I appreciate you honoring me by inviting me on your podcast. I'm glad I got to know you, you know, when I first started the chat 4 years ago, and it's been a pleasure.
Welcome to the Threes Company Leadership Podcast. We're joined with AP teacher Martha Rush from Moundsview Public Schools in the Minneapolis area there. And she's also an author of Beat Boredom, Engaging Tuned Out Teenagers, and a speaker, and does a lot of talking about student engagement around the state of Minnesota, Wisconsin. She was just in Wisconsin, so we were able to get some time with her today. So Martha, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Let's get started with you telling us a little bit about your path to becoming the teacher that you are today.
Great. Well, I have been a teacher for 25 years, 22 of those at Moundsview. It's actually a second career for me. I had a first very brief career as a journalist for 5 years in Kansas, and that's actually what set me on this path, because I ended up being an education reporter for 3 years. So I read a lot about education in schools and went to school board meetings and interviewed teachers, and it just got me really interested and intrigued by some of the problems in education and, you know, why we aren't being more successful. So I went back to school to become a teacher and loved it, and ended up leaving newspapers. And so I've been teaching ever since. And through that time, I have become really interested in this issue of student engagement. You know, how do we not just tell kids you have to learn this or learn this because I said so, but how do we get them excited about learning the content that we need and or want to teach them?
Yeah, that's all good. And that's good stuff. All your stuff that you do with engaging students is pretty cool. You're a social studies teacher that covers quite a bit of stuff. Who are some people impacted you and helped you become the teacher, the mentor that you are today?
I'm actually going to name two people. One is Dr. Kurt Anderson, who is retired now, a professor at University of Minnesota Duluth. And Kurt was, if you know him, he was the most enthusiastic, passionate teacher of economics that I've ever met. And he made everything so much fun, so interesting, and you just wanted to learn more. And the first time I went to a workshop with him, I was like, that's who I want to be. I want my students to love this as much as he's making me love this. So he was just a great mentor and inspiration in terms of my subject area. I primarily teach economics. But in terms of school, I would say my mentor is Kathy Miller. She was a teacher. She was actually on the interview committee that hired me at Moundsview. And she was the leader of our department for many years. And she was a world history teacher, and really just so interested, a student of the world, just, you know, super inquisitive, loved to hear what was going on, which really got her kids excited about all kinds of things that I would find very hard to get kids excited about. She modeled really high expectations. And as the leader of our department, she really led us by example. I mean, she was amazing. We were able to resolve all kinds of conflicts that other departments struggle with, like, which classes do you give a new teacher? You know, it was never, let's dump the tough classes we don't want on a new teacher. If there was a new difficult class, she would take it. She'd be like, I'll do it. I'll develop it. And she worked with all of us to really encourage us to be passionate about our subject and also really effective at connecting with our students.
Oh, those sound like great mentors, and very good. I just love hearing those stories. They're kind of the ones that probably in this podcast that speak to me the most, just hearing how, you know, everyone has those couple of people that they really levitate to and attach to, and then they kind of mold themselves that way. So that's a couple of great teachers there. Being a teacher, being, you know, in a large school district, how do you embrace risk-taking as a leader?
Well, I would say for me, it's about just being willing to try new things all the time, being willing to actually do what I say. So if I'm going to write a blog post or I'm going to, you know, talk to teachers at my school about, hey, try a new strategy, you know, it's scary to do a simulation, but, you know, give up that control for one day and try this. So I have to be willing to do that as well. And so it's for me, the last class that I really, really got rid of traditional teaching methods in was my AP macroeconomics class. And it was very hard to do. It took a lot of thought and, you know, a lot of reading and thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this class differently and not lose what I've done? But I think, and by the way, it was really effective. I ended up flipping that classroom, and now the kids work in collaborative groups to solve problems during the class period. I don't lecture in that class, and the test scores actually went up. So, which of course is what you hope for, but to have that happen in the first year was pretty amazing. But I have to be willing to take those risks myself and put myself out there if I'm going to try to help or lead others to do the same.
Yeah, why do you feel sometimes that maybe teachers try to hold on to that traditional setting? I know there's big movements and people are really stepping out and doing different things in the room, but why do you think some are hesitant to do that sometimes?
Well, I think, you know, we are very comfortable with the way we were taught, and almost all of us were taught in a traditional way. So, you know, doing something different is scary. It takes a lot of time to plan it, especially the first time. You know, you don't necessarily have support of colleagues, administrators, students, parents, all the people that you want to have on board. You know, people like predictability and routine and knowing what to expect. And, you know, when you try something new and you think this is going to be so great, people are going to really love it, and then you get pushback at all, you know, especially from students and or parents, then it becomes really scary, I think, to move ahead with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Very good answer there. What do you feel are some important values that you demonstrate as a teacher leader in your school district?
Well, certainly, as I said, the modeling, you know, do as I do. I would never tell people to do something that I wouldn't do myself. I think, you know, building relationships. I mean, we talk about that a lot, building relationships with our students. But we have to build relationships with each other, and we have to build relationships with our administrators. So I love those days when, you know, the administration says, okay, we're going to mix you up in different groups on this professional development day. And, you know, you're just randomly assigned to be with a group of people you don't know. You know, I want to get to know those people. You know, there are a lot of people on our staff I don't know. So definitely take advantage of that time. I think it's really important to not think you have all the answers. If you're going to be a leader among teachers, I just experienced that this week. I was working with 8 mostly new AP economics teachers in Wisconsin, but one of the people in my group had been teaching the class for 15 years. He didn't need me to walk in there and tell him I know everything, you know, so I had to kind of help incorporate him as a leader in the class too. Well, how would you explain things? Because teachers need to be respected and feel valued, and that they're bringing something to the table as well. So I think that's really important if you're leading teachers, to treat them all with respect and acknowledge their expertise.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's an awesome response to that, because I do feel that is the one thing that you hear, like if teachers aren't feeling that they're valued or their opinion doesn't matter, then that's usually when there's issues in some school districts. So I really, really like that response. I like how you incorporated, you know, working with adults is obviously different than, not so different than working with kids, but taking someone with experience and using them. So that was a great example there as well. What leadership skills maybe were difficult for you to develop?
So I am never a person who's really thought out leadership positions. It's funny, I never really thought of myself that way. And I actually remember being in high school, and I was editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper, and the advisor said, what made you decide to become a leader? How did you develop being a leader? And I was like, what do you mean, leader? He's like, you're editor-in-chief. Like, oh, I never really thought of that. I just was doing the things I wanted to do. I never really thought of it as I want to be in charge. It was more just, I'm interested in this process. I want to learn more about it. And I would say the same is true in my school. I've never really sought official titles. But administrators and others would say, well, you're a leader among the teachers. People listen to you. I was like, oh, that's cool. So I think when I step back and think about your question, I think that probably that willingness to put myself out there, or, you know, you could even consider it like self-promotion, that's not my strong suit. I'm not going to say, hey, put me in charge of that, or I want to do that. I tend to sort of let things happen more organically.
Yeah, just take it over as it comes. But it is always crazy, yeah. Especially on the teacher end doing these podcasts. It's like, well, I never really thought of myself as a leader, but it's like, no, you all are. Like, you're leading, you know, you're leading students. It doesn't have to be a title, but there are people obviously, and it's fine. If you let it happen organically, that's probably why staff respect you so much too, is because you're not saying, hey, well, I'm, you know, head of this department, you know, you got to listen to what I'm saying. So yeah, I think that's very true on how that goes. How do you get stakeholders? You know, I'm guessing your department's pretty big there in your district. So how do you get stakeholders to buy into maybe new ideas or changes to tweaking classrooms, or, you know, how you guys are teaching kids?
Good question. I mean, number one is enthusiasm, right? Like I'm when I have an idea, I'm very passionate about it. I'm not going to get all like legalistic and technical and argue with you, but I'm very passionate about, look, guys, we really should do this. Look at why we should do this. And I can get people on board with excitement. Again, you know, show not tell, like do what I'm saying. So I'm not going to say you guys should do this. I'm going to say, look, I'm doing this. You guys should give it a try. And I do believe, I think we sometimes get overwhelmed with people saying, we are data driven, but I do think it's important to be tracking the data. If we're going to be doing something different, I'm going to look for research. You know, I'm going to pull a research article and say, here's what this says. Or I'm going to say, look, I tried this in my class and here's what happened to my test scores. So I would say it's a combination of those things. It's passion, enthusiasm, willingness to do it myself, and then also, you know, having data and research to support what I'm advocating.
Yes, for sure. Passion is always the one I think that overpowers everybody. It's great to have the research and data, but when you have someone that's really strongly has strong feelings towards an area and can positively sell it, I think that always helps out. This is always my tough one. My last question. I try to make it difficult. So I've always liked to hear the responses here. So, you know, but resolving conflict, any, you know, do you have any tips or anything that you've used that have helped you in your teaching career?
Such a great question. So little backstory for a second. So we all have, obviously, our parents as pretty strong role models. And my dad's job the entire time I was growing up was basically a conflict resolution. And he worked in the commodities industry. So he was like trying to help people not go to court, right, when they were angry about what their broker did. So I grew up with a parent who was just a model of this ability to resolve conflict, which was pretty cool. So resolving conflict has never really intimidated me. I think, you know, what I learned from him is really listen. When other people are talking, don't just like sit there and wait for your turn to talk, but actually listen to what they're saying. Really value their perspective and realize that everyone honestly has a very different perspective. So the way I see it is definitely not the only way to see it. Or if I'm working with two different teachers and they're in a conflict, or two students, like everyone has their legitimate point of view, and you can't just gloss over that or tell them they're wrong. You know, the way they see it is wrong. I think incrementally is the way to resolve conflict, like help people, you know, move an inch. Don't expect everybody to move a mile the first day. So getting people to listen and talk to each other, or if someone's in conflict with me, you know, being willing to have that conversation, but accept the fact that we might not walk away the first time 100% in agreement. Sometimes you have to leave a little bit of ambiguity. So I think those are all important things. And of course, you know, if I'm in a conflict with someone, just being, you know, not getting defensive is huge. My children went to the school that I teach at. And I remember when my older son, he's 25 now, I remember he was a freshman so many years ago, some of the parents, you know, these, I knew these kids, you know, he's friends with them, and their parents were unhappy about a particular teacher, and they wanted to sort of rally everybody to go in and complain. And I said, if you all go in together and attack this person, all you're going to do is create a very defensive teacher. I'm like, just talk to him as an individual, but try that first. And they actually did, and they were able to actually resolve the situation. But I think we need to be really careful about not attacking people and not getting defensive, you know, when we're criticized as well.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I think that's all really good advice with that. And, you know, kind of the one that speaks to me always is, you know, don't take offense, because sometimes we take it personal when people don't want to agree with us. And that's all, probably in any leadership role, that's the worst thing you can do, is just like, no, you got to do it my way. And then obviously, yeah, sometimes you're not going to resolve it on the first shot and walking away. So, and then helping your son, you know, guide them that way through that process. That's some really good things there. Martha, that's it for the questions. You nailed it. You did a great job today. They can follow you on Twitter. I know it's Martha S. Rush on Twitter there. You can find her there. And then you have theneverbore.org. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners before we end today?
Sure. Yes, I have also, I have a blog at martharush.org. And so Neverbore has a blog also, but I only write for that when I really have something like a new curriculum idea or something. But the martharush.org blog site, during the school year at least, I post that once a week with my thoughts on educational issues or things I'm trying out with my students. So I encourage you to follow that as well, and hopefully people maybe pick up a copy of my book and see, would it be helpful for, you know, for staff development as a book study or something like that. So, yes, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate being included, and excited to hear what the other people have to say.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad that you were able to make this work and join us. So you did an excellent job today. And again, I want to wish you the best of luck in your school year. And I hope you get some rest and relaxation so you can recharge up and get ready for that September push again.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to episode 5 of the Threes Company Leadership Podcast. We appreciate everyone who takes the time to check this out. I hope everyone is having a relaxing and restful summer and is recharging for the school year. Please remember to like and subscribe where possible. That helps keep this podcast free.